not have a purport. Text 16. In the tract of land known as Bharatavarsha, as in Ilavritavarsha, there are many mountains and rivers. Some of the mountains are known as Malaya, Mangalaprastha, Mainaka, Trikuta, Rishabha, Kutaka, Kollaka, Sakhya, Devagiri, Rishyamukha, Sri Shaila, Venkata, Mahendra, Varidhara, Vindhya, Shuktimana, Rukshagiri, Pariyatra, Drona, Chitrakuta, Govardhana, Raivataka, Kakubha, Neela, Goka Mukha, Indrakila, and Kamagiri. Besides these, there are many other hills with many large and small rivers flowing from their slopes. Texts 17 and 18. Two of the rivers, the Brahmaputra and the Shona, are called Nadas or main rivers. These are other great rivers that are very prominent. I think it should say there are other great rivers that are very prominent. Chandravasa, Tamraparani, Avatoda, Kritamala, Vaihayasi, Kaveri, Beni, Payaswini, Sharkravarta, Tungabhadra, Krishnavenya, Bhimarthi, Godavari, Nirvindhya, Payoshni, Tapi, Reva, Surasa, Narmada, Charmanvati, Mahanadi, Vedasmriti, Rishikulya, Trisama, Kaushiki, Mandakini, Yamuna, Saraswati, Drishadvati, Gomati, Sharayu, Rodhasvati, Saptavati, Shushoma, Shatadru, Chandrabhaga, Marudvrdha, Vitastha, Asikni, and Vishwa. The inhabitants of Bharatavarsha are purified because they always remember these rivers. Sometimes they chant the names of these rivers as mantras, and sometimes they go directly to the rivers to touch them and bathe in them. Thus the inhabitants of Bharatavarsha become purified. Purport. All these rivers are transcendental. Therefore one can be purified by remembering them, touching them, or bathing in them. This practice is still going on. Text 19. The people who take birth in this tract of land are divided according to the qualities of material nature. The mode of goodness, sattva-guna, passion, rajoguna, and ignorance, tamoguna. Some of them are born as exalted personalities, some are ordinary human beings, and some are extremely abominable. For in Bharatavarsha, one takes birth exactly according to one's past karma. If one's position is ascertained by a bona fide spiritual master, and one is properly trained to engage in the service of the Lord Lord Vishnu, according to the four social divisions, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and the four spiritual divisions, Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasa, one's life becomes perfect. Purport. For further information, one should refer to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text 18, and chapter 18, texts 42 through 45. Sri Ramanujacharya writes in his book, Vedanta Sangraha. I'm not going to read the Sanskrit, because Prabhupada does not give a translation to what Ramanujacharya has said. Quoting from Vishnu Purana 389, the great sage Parashara Muni has recommended, Varnashramacharavata Purushena Parappuman Vishnur Aryadhyate Pantha Nanyata Toshakaranam. Quote, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is worshipped by the proper execution of prescribed duties in the system of Varna and Ashrama. There is no other way to satisfy the Lord. In the land of Bharatavarsha, the institution of Varnashrama Dharma may be easily adopted. At the present moment, certain demoniac sections of the population of Bharatavarsha are disregarding the system of Varnashram Dharma. Because there is no institution to teach people how to become Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudras, or Brahmacharis, Grahasthas, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis, these demons want a classless society. This is resulting in chaotic conditions. In the name of secular government, unqualified people are taking the supreme governmental posts. No one is being trained to act according to the principles of Varnashrama Dharma, and thus people are becoming increasingly degraded and are heading in the direction of animal life. The real aim of life is liberation, but unfortunately, the opportunity for liberation is being denied to people in general, and therefore their human lives are being spoiled. The Krishna consciousness movement, however, is being propagated all over the world to re-establish the Varnashrama Dharma system and thus save human society from gliding down to hellish life. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpataru Vyashcha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. In the description of Jambudvipa, first of all, who's offering these prayers? That's a generic question, but there's a particular person who's offering these prayers. Narada Muni is offering these prayers on behalf of the residents of Jambudvipa. And so, he's describing the list of rivers that flow in Jambudvipa. So all these rivers are in India, and some are names we don't know, I've never heard. So either their names are become obscure, but some of the names are still famous. Before the rivers, he gives a list of all the mountains in Jambudvipa. Some we know, some we don't know. For example, the Malaya mountains are in South India. Sometimes it's also called as Malaysia, because sandalwood, of course now Malaysia is famous for rubber, not sandalwood anymore. Or in South India, in Karnataka, the Malaya Hills, they're also called that, where there is sandalwood forests. Or Mainaka. Do you remember Mainaka? When Hanuman was flying from Rameshwaram to Lanka, a mountain comes out from the ocean and asks him to take rest for a while. And Hanuman says, no, no, I don't have time to rest. I'm on the Lord's service. So this is very nice lesson there. And he says, no, no, please do. And that mountain's name was Mainaka. Then Trikuta, Lord Ramachandra went to Trikuta mountain. Then there is the Sahya. Sahya mountain is on the western coast of India. It's called the Sahyadris. Adri means mountain. So the whole what's called the Konkan range is right along the western coast of India is a very, very long mountain range called the Sahyadri. Then there is, we've heard Rishyamukha. It appears in the Mahabharata. Venkata. Venkata is where Lord Balaji is in South India. So he is called Venkatadri. Or Adri means mountain. Mahindra. Mahindra Hill is a little further south from there, where Indra performed austerities. And it is described that Hanuman jumped off that mountain. There is the Vindhya range. We've heard in the past times of Radharani's appearance that Vindhya wanted to compete with the Himalayas. And because Vindhya had a little arrogance or pride, when Agastya Muni came to meet Vindhya, Vindhya bowed down. And Agastya didn't ask him to stand up again. So Vindhya is lower than the Himalayas. Chitrakuta Mountain, we know. Lord Ramachandra spent time on Chitrakuta Mountain as well with Sita Devi. Govardhan, we should know this. Govardhan as well. Neela. Lord Jagannath, yes, Neeladri. Neeladri is the mountain on which Lord Jagannath appeared and his temple is there, etc. And then there are these wonderful rivers that have some historical or spiritual significance in connection to the personality of Godhead. Just this morning, I was hearing that anything connected to Krishna is of interest to the devotees. So Prabhupada quotes, we go to see the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Now what is a devotee's interest in a battlefield? They don't have any interest in battlefield. We don't go to Gettysburg and, you know, pay our obeisances there. But we go to Kurukshetra because although it's a battlefield, it is in relation to Krishna. That is the place where Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. There's a pastime connected to Krishna. So a battlefield becomes important to us. Similarly, these rivers, they become important because they're connected to the Lord's pastime and all of his different incarnations. There is some connection. For example, this river called Sarayu. The Sarayu river is in the banks of Ayodhya. And it's described that Lord Ramachandra wound up his pastimes by entering Sarayu river. Or, different Yamuna here, of course. Mandakini. Mandakini is the river that flows from the Himalayas where Naranarayana Rishi are there. And Mandakini flows down from the mountains. The Brahmaputra comes from the other side, Gomukha, and they meet together in a place called Prayaga. And from there she is called Ganga, the Ganges River. And we know that all these rivers have some connection with the Lord. The Ganges is considered to be the Charanamrita of Lord Vishnu. So Narada Muni is Prabhupada saying that the residents of Jambudvipa, they remember these rivers, they chant the names, or they bathe in them, they touch them or they bathe in them and become purified. I was going to get into purification, but we'll skip that for now. Then the next verse talks about the people in Jambudvipa, that there is a perfect class system of the four Varanas and the four Ashramas. The four Varanas are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. And the four ashramas are brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Now this is a social division. Why does society need to be divided this way? What do you think? Very good. Yeah. Does any well-established organization have departments? Yeah. Similarly, society has certain departments. The Brahmanas, they are the leaders in terms of vision. They teach people how to conduct their lives. They are the persons who disseminate Vedic knowledge to the rest of the society. Kshatriyas manage the society. They make sure that certain rules and regulations are laid out, everyone is performing their duties, etc. The Vaishyas, they are meant to feed the rest of the community. So they are farmers. Because without food, without fuel, nothing can go. In a company, in an organization, what's the fuel? Money. But in a proper society, the fuel is food. If there are no food grains, you cannot survive. And then you need labor, someone who actually moves their hands and legs and gets things done. So a social body needs to be organized. And then there are life stages, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas, because everyone goes through life stages. Now, the varnashram system in and of itself is not spiritual, because you can have a perfectly ordered society without any God consciousness in it. Because the basis of such division of society is their psychophysical nature. Those who are in the mode of goodness are the brahmanas. Those who are in the mode of passion are kshatriyas. Those who have a mix of passion and ignorance are the vaishyas. And those who are in ignorance are the shudras. Those who are in the mode of goodness are brahmanas, because they come in contact with transcendence. Those who are in the mode of passion, they want results, they want to get things done, and therefore they are kshatriyas. Those who are in a mixture of passion and ignorance are the vaishyas, because they are focused on results and not so interested in transcendental life. And shudras are just not interested in transcendental life. They're only interested in one thing. No, not just sex, but how are they going to continue their life? You know, what will they get to eat? Where will they get some place to sleep? Some sex, and just some place where they can live. They're not thinking about the higher values of life. They don't care so much about morality, ethics, or even spirituality for that matter. They live by certain principles. Their principle is, I have to work hard and I have to make money. That's it. And whoever is willing to pay me, I'll work hard for them. Money is the main criterion for them. Economic interests. So this four divisions of society are made on the basis of psychophysical nature. And I'm going to come back to the Bhagavad Gita there. When we find that a person's mentality and their occupation match, they're happy, they're satisfied. But a person's mentality and activity, when they don't match, then they become frustrated, or they feel unsatisfied. They don't feel a sense of fulfillment. So the brahmanas, they're expert at providing occupations to persons according to their natures. If you give a shudra all the sacred texts and say, you sit down here and you study nicely, they will become frustrated, because it's just not their nature. Or you ask a shudra to think long term, big picture view of life, and where life needs to go, they'll be frustrated, because they just can't think like that. You ask a kshatriya, just be tolerant. It's difficult for them. Or you ask a vaishya, don't worry so much about money and profit. They become very uncomfortable. So any occupation where mentality does not match the activity, or any occupation where the mentality is not matching that particular activity, there's a mismatch. And when there is a mismatch, there is dissatisfaction. So now, Prabhupada often talks about the modern education system. In the modern education system, we all go through the mill, the machine of education, where they don't care what is the person's mentality. They have a curriculum. They look at, by this age, certain developmental abilities must be there, and they try to exercise that ability, and they push the entire group from one grade to another. Done. And then basically, my headache is over, it's the next person's headache to manage all these children. Teachers don't look at, oh, here's their nature. According to this nature, this kind of education will be helpful for them. It's not possible for them to do, because that's not even a sense of how things should be done. Because the basic operating principle in this context, in the modern context, is economic development. And economic development means you have to find a job. Without a job, you cannot have money. The only other way is to do something illegal. You have to have a job if you need money. In the Vedic system, you don't need a job to have money. Brahmanas never earned livelihood per se. They didn't go to a job. The society took care of them. They lived on charity and they gave back in charity. The Kshatriyas, they took taxes and they used the tax money in the benefit of society and kept something and reserves for themselves as well. Vaishyas were grain merchants, so they had money because they had grain. And Shudras were paid a salary. That's how money was distributed. But now, we don't care for Brahmanas. Our Kshatriyas are, you know, better not to mention them. Vaishyas are not into agrarian-based economy. And everyone is Shudra-like. They want money, so they will find themselves a job. Because without a job, you cannot have money. And without money, you cannot live. Except if you live in a temple. If the way Prabhupada designed it, we don't need a job. But we're very busy. So I'll come to that part later. So this system has economic development as its basis. So naturally, people's mentality and occupations don't match. Most people go for an occupation on the basis of what's popular, what pays well. They find out that, oh, if you have these kinds of degrees, they're well-paying jobs. So a person will study and work for that kind of job. And it's not their nature. So they are frustrated. Right? You meet students, we've gone through schools, we know our experience. We can't say we all enjoyed school. Certain people may have enjoyed it because it matches their natures, but not everyone can say like that. There's a mismatch because economic development is the basis. In the Varnashram system being talked about here, pleasing Vishnu is the basis. Because then everyone has a way by which in their occupation or through their occupation, they can serve Lord Vishnu. And there is no judgment. I'm a Brahmana, you're a Shudra. I'm good, you're bad. It's nothing like that. It's according to nature. And people respect each other's natures. Now this is called Asuric Varnashram. Asuric means it's godless. It's just a division of society according to one's psychophysical nature. How Prabhupada designed it within the temple confines is what we say, Daivi Varnashrama. Daivi is centered around Krishna. So there are divisions of occupations. Some devotees have to teach. Some devotees have to manage certain things and organize. Some devotees have to generate income. And some devotees have to use their hands and legs for labor-like work. But within Daivi Varnashram, it's not so much psychophysical nature. What's the operating feature? Pleasing Krishna, yes. More importantly, it's the order of the Guru. As engaged by the Guru or as engaged by the Guru's representatives. If they say today, teach something, the devotee teaches something. If they say today you blah blah blah, go distribute books or do something, then that's what they do. Oh, just stop, don't do all this, just go, you know, clean the bathroom. Okay, we'll clean the bathroom. It's not like, I'm Brahminical Prabhu, I have a Brahmin initiation, I don't clean bathrooms. Ask the Shudra Prabhu to clean. It's not like that. Then that is a bodily conception. In Daivi Varnashram, it is doing the needful, Prabhupada said. As the need is, so we do. And for that matter, any person, any devotee develops. Of course, their natures are there, I'm not denying that. But the spirit of Daivi Varnashram is as needed, doing the needful. And we find that in reality, there is a little difficulty. We have a psychophysical nature that doesn't necessarily match the kind of service we may be doing. We may be doing a particular kind of service either because we think that's a nice service to do, or it seems fashionable, or whatever is our idea, or it needs to be done, or someone forces me to do it. My economic development is dependent on that. Like if I say, I'm not going to do that service, then some authority can say, you see the door there? Pack your bags. So I'm afraid that I shouldn't say anything like that, because if I get kicked out or asked to leave, then I have to go find a job, and oh man, who's going to do all that, pay rent, cook for myself. Some people may prefer that, which is fine. But, oh, I won't have the association of devotees, so let me just say yes and do it. This is called begrudgingly done service. Or any of the reasons. Or it may match our nature perfectly well. Yeah, this is good. I like this. We have a range of reasons by which we accept a service. In the development of our Krishna consciousness, what we have to strive for is that anything that is asked of us to do, we happily say, yeah, this is, I'll please Krishna through this particular service. Today it's this, tomorrow it can be something else. Like we heard recently, someone asked, Maharaj was explaining, someone asked Srila Prabhupada, is it okay to be very attached to our service? And Prabhupada said, yes, one must be very attached to their service. And when that service is changed, they should be very attached to the new service. I have a different way of saying it. My way of saying it is, oh, I say the same thing a little differently, different words, is we must not necessarily be attached to a particular service. We must be attached to the idea of serving. Our attachment is to service, not to this one or that one. This kind of service, I like it very much. That kind of service, really? And more importantly, we are attached to the person or persons. Because of a loving relationship, any service is possible. We don't evaluate a service by just the modality of it or just the mechanics of it. Our service is to the devotees or the spiritual master. So if the spiritual master says, do this, we do this. He says, stop doing this, do that, we do that. We do it with the same joyfulness that we were to do if we like something. Because our attachment is to the person and our attachment is to the attitude of service, not necessarily a kind of service. This is very, very important. In, I forget the year, there was a little confrontation between the sannyasis and the grihasthas in the movement. And His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj was very much pro-sannyas life. And he had made the rules and regulations in the temples such that they were not necessarily favorable to the grihasthas. That's how they felt, the grihasthas felt. You know, like they said, that the grihasthas should serve the deities, but the temple will not take care of any of their economic needs. The grihasthas threw a fit. How is that possible? If we are serving the deities and taking care of things, what do you mean? We have to go find occupations now? Yeah, this belongs, the money belongs to the temple. Whatever, that was the... So the grihasthas, they all got together. They were all temple presidents, the grihasthas. They got together and in Mayapur, they protested to Srila Prabhupada. And they made their case. This whole thing was brewing for about a year. So when they made their case to Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada heard them out and he said, yeah, it makes sense. I accept your proposal, he said to the grihasthas of the temple presidents. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, at that time as a young devotee, felt his case was weakening. So he was a little upset. And he came to Srila, after everyone had left, he came to Srila Prabhupada and he said, "I, the way I want to do things doesn't seem to work out. What's the use of all of this? Maybe I should just go to China. You know, maybe I just go serve in China." That was like a very extreme statement that didn't have any thought behind it. And Srila Prabhupada said, "Very good idea. I've always been wanting to preach in China. Krishna has spoken through you. Tomorrow you should leave for China." No, Prabhupada, I was just joking. And Srila Prabhupada said, "You can't joke. You're going to China." Oh no, he started crying. How can I go to China? That is severely, what's that? What was that? Not democracy, they were communists. A severely communistic country, there's nothing there, no devotees. Prabhupada said, "Krishna spoke through you, you should go." He protested the whole evening, he protested. No. You're literally crying. And he went to take a rest. Next morning he came in front of Prabhupada, offered his obeisances and said, "I'm ready to go." And Prabhupada told all the devotees, this is his greatness. He's a very, very wonderful devotee. That because he's very attached, the principle was, because he's very attached to me, he will do the most difficult things that I ask him to do, whether he likes it or not. And we know from then on all success came. So the principle is that our attachment is to the person. Our attachment is to the service attitude, not so much to this service or that service. In a dynamic environment, these things keep changing. And those devotees who are training us carefully in Krishna consciousness, they intentionally change things for us just to help us develop our service attitude. Because unless that service attitude develops, we may be wrongly thinking of Krishna consciousness as something other than what it is. So we will notice that in our life as devotees, sometimes we are asked to do things that we may not necessarily like or doesn't match our nature or something. It's simply to help us develop that particular service attitude. Yeah, okay. That's needful, I'll do it. A devotee who can do so, they will nourish or they will exercise that service attitude nicely. A devotee who can't will struggle with it, will take time. But it's very important. Within that service attitude is submission. And without submission, Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita that you cannot become, we cannot become qualified to see the truth. Pranipata pariprashna sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam. Right? Jai Jagannath described the word upadeksha as initiation. Did he describe that? Upadekshanti, that the tattva darshi, those who see the truth, Those who see Krishna, those who see or live according to spiritual life, they will not give us access to that truth unless there is submission. What is the definition of submission? How would you define it? Anyone? Surrender one's own initiative? Something more subtler than initiative. It's in the right direction. Free will. Obedience is one aspect of submission, yes. Trust? Yeah, submission is built on trust. That's correct. Is for my own good. That's part of trust. Yes. What else? Recognizing an authority. Of course, for submission there has to be an authority and a subordinate, spiritually speaking. Not necessarily desire, but the right word is to. We all have conceptions. We have certain conceptions of what is right, what is wrong, what is truth, what is not truth, right? We have certain conceptions. What is important in life? When we came to Krishna consciousness, we had some conceptions, you know. Peace is important. Money is important. Service to humanity is important. Whatever the conceptions are. Submission means that when Guru Sadhu Shastra offer a conception to us, a spiritual conception, we leave aside our conception and accept theirs. This is called submission. And built in that is trust, obedience, giving up our free will, although we don't give it up, we willingly accept the conception. But most importantly, submission means I accept the conception that Guru, Sadhu and Shastra are offering me. For example, do not pursue materialistic life, there is no happiness in it. That's a conception that Guru teaches, right? Prabhupada said, I've heard this from Rompada Maharaj repeated many, many times. Last year's Vyasa Puja, and that was the message that he beat on like about 20 times in one lecture. So I'll paraphrase it. I wish I can repeat the sentence verbatim, but it was something like, one of the main duties of a spiritual master is to help the disciple understand the abject futility in a life of sense gratification. So we carry these conceptions with us. And when we come to meet the Guru, Guru slowly, steadily, firmly dismantles those conceptions. And it happens as a teamwork. You know, if the disciple doesn't accept those conceptions, the Guru cannot do anything. Right? So it's done as a teamwork. The Guru-disciple relationship works where the Guru gives spiritual conceptions and the disciple accepts them. Then there is realization of the truth. So this submission is very, very critical. To help submission, we have what is called inquiry. Because when our conceptions that are existing in our consciousness are clash with the conception that the Guru gives, that clash is called a doubt. We ask a question. Generally, they don't clash for most on the audience. The conceptions don't clash. You know why? Because we don't even touch the conceptions that the Guru gives. We just let them pass by. Oh, this is not for me. I'm not too interested in this one. But for a person who's sincerely seeking, as soon as the conceptions that they're carrying clashes with what the Guru is saying, they ask a question. Why is it this way? So pranipat, submission and inquiry. Now, for submission to become fully manifest, inquiry is to help it. But for that conception to take root in the heart of the disciple, there has to be. What's the third one? Service. Unless one engages in the service of the Guru, those conceptions don't stick in the consciousness. They vanish, they evaporate. So Krishna describes these three as the most important or the basic framework on which one can aspire to see the truth or know the truth. This is Daivi Varnashrama. That with serving Krishna, anyone can do any service. There's a beautiful picture. I'll end with this. There's a beautiful picture of, I don't know if you've seen in, I think it was in BTG or somewhere. Definitely in the ISKCON archive somewhere. There's a picture of a farm. And in that farm is a bullock cart. Not a bullock cart, a plow. Harnessed to bullocks. Big ox, I think, oxen. And a sannyasi is actually plowing the field. The sannyasi is His Holiness Jayapataka Swami. Now, sannyasis, they don't do Vaishya work. They don't plow the fields. They're not farmers. And you'll see other pictures where devotees, they may have Brahman thread on their shoulder, but they're carrying bags of cement. Because devotees with their own hands constructed the Mayapur Chandrodaya Mandir building. So one hand the sannyasi is, you know, plowing the fields. Another hand the so-called brahmana devotees, not so-called, brahmana devotees are carrying sacks of sand and cement up the stairs while the building is being constructed. Sannyasi doing the service of plowing the fields like that. Because that is what is needed by, that was needed by Srila Prabhupada at that time. And that's how he engaged them. So the operating principle is to do what is needful. Yes, overall our natures also are important because we're in this field where we're not fully materialistic in our living or lifestyle. We can't say that we're fully spiritual either. We're somewhere in transition or in transit from one realm to another realm. So yes, our natures are taken into considerations, and are engaged accordingly. But there are times when all that is not a consideration. Especially when in the phase of being trained to develop submission. Very important. At least this is how I've understood it. So, any questions, comments? Etasha, Shukadeva Dasa.
Hare Krishna, Ram. Thanks for the class.
Hare Krishna.
I'm going to try to make this question. So, Daivi Varnashram means that everyone is able to do different services. It doesn't matter if it's our nature or not, right? I don't know if it's, I understand correctly.
Most importantly, Daivi Varnashram means that we are engaged in service of Krishna directly. Sometimes the particular service may or may not match our nature. So if you take in any society, any set of people and you divide them according to their natures, it's Varnashram, but it's not centered around serving Krishna. But when Krishna is the center of that service, then it is called Daivi. Sometimes that service may not match our nature. Sometimes, sure.
So I have another question. In a practical way, for example, living in the temple,
yeah.
Why we don't have a system, for example, like Das Anudas? No? Or why are the same pujaris doing the same service? Why don't try to qualify every devotee,
yeah,
and make the service of pujari?
Yeah.
Or why are the same kirtaniyas doing the same service?
I agree.
Now, why don't have this a system of everybody can do everything?
That's correct.
That's a question that I have.
That's a question I have too. And One of the things is, for being pujari, let's say, since you asked about being pujari, a certain development necessary. But the vision is that each one of us one day hopefully will do that kind of service as we develop our own Krishna consciousness. I insisted that all of Prabhu sitting here should learn how to offer arati to Prabhupada. There's a reason for insisting that. Not because scheduling is difficult. I'm happy to do Prabhupada arati every day if I have to do it. But there is a reason. There are reasons. One reason is learning how to do arati creates a samskara that facilitates going to become qualified to be on the altar. That's one. Second, it creates a personal relationship with Prabhupada. The other was to Guru Puja Kirtan. Different people should lead it. It's not the same persons. Different people should lead it. It's important. But before we get there, there is something on the ground level. The ground level is something needs to be done and you ask someone, can you do this? The first expression you get is, really? I should do it? This is my japa time. Or this is my whatever varieties of reasons that we have. That means somewhere that sense of knowing what is required for serving Krishna is not clear yet. Still, yesterday we were having this conversation that we have a tendency to get so attached to our schedule. Because within the mode of goodness, being organized is a quality. And Krishna describes that one is bound to happiness and knowledge in the mode of goodness. And the happiness we get is from being regulated. Oh, that's nice. So if something is happening and suddenly someone says, oh, can you stop this and do that? What? That's going to obstruct my sense of happiness. I'm going to stop this now. So that mentality needs a little training. Or we say, one of the senses, let's say, let me pick something. You pick a service that interrupts what we are doing. Daita, you have most experience. Huh? Cutting flowers or cutting vegetables. Those happen after the morning class. Let's say during the morning japa time. What's the one that interrupts something? Pick tulsi leaves. Pick tulsi leaf. What did you say? Say it again. Filling water for Kishore Kishori. And you imagine a devotee comes and says, can you please fill some water for Kishore Kishori? The very object for whom we are singing, dancing, praying, someone comes and says, can you fill some water for Kishore Kishori? And what's our response? This is my japa time. What? It's unbelievable for me personally. It's unbelievable. Like, what is wrong? I have to fill water? I'm sitting here. My dear Krishna, please engage me in your service. My dear Radharani, please inspire Krishna to engage me in his service. Yes, Prabhu. Can you fill some water for Kishore? Can you ask someone else, Prabhu? Why always me? There's some disconnect, no? In the way, I mean, I'm just picking on that one thing. Of course, there may be some legitimate reasons by which, you know, I have to go do something else. My whole day is planned out and now, you know, something. But Krishna is not going to say, if it is convenient for you, Prabhu, then you do. Otherwise, I will not drink water. Nirjala for me. Today, Kishore Kishore decided, Radharani, let's just do Nirjala today. It's not going to be like that. So that service attitude somewhere has something that's needed for refinement. Of course, we shouldn't live where always, you know, we never chant our rounds because there's service. I don't believe in that. If we can't chant our rounds, we can't serve. That's sure. So we need to chant our rounds. But being attached to my way of doing things, that's a problem. And I will say for sure, in the way I see training, I will make sure that I will break that. I will make sure. Someone may not like it, and that's fine.
With the proper attitude that you talk about. But in the practical way, I'm here since June, for example. And I never hear about a course of worship, for example.
Correct, that's the conversation.
Or I'm giving classes of Mridanga now, in order to help the devotees and to do kirtans. Everybody can do kirtan. No? And I don't know if it's in a practical way. What can we do, in order to train us?
And I don't have an answer because I'm limited for myself in this way, that we're only trying to... This is 2014, and we're talking about what about a course in worshipping the deities? What about teaching Mridanga? What about whatever? Cooking, for example. Where we started off a few years ago was not about that. Where we started off was, I don't know if anyone is there available to offer an aarti for the deities today. Or we don't even know if the deities will have their offering. Can we find someone? Oh, they're not initiated. Doesn't matter. Let them cook. So from there, It's a problem where we're evolving. It's a nice problem to have. And the responsibility lies with, I guess, me and us here to start thinking about these things. It's not that we're not. We're also trying to. But as that is happening, a practical problem that I also have is the same thing. No, Prabhu, I won't do this today. It doesn't match my plan. Okay. So it's a tough situation for me. I'm sure someone else would have been far more, far better at managing it. But yes, the vision is there, that to train the devotees in different aspects of temple life. But at least for me, it's going to take more time. So I do something that's not so formalized. It's informal. Get everyone to offer aarti. And I'm very glad you're teaching Mridanga. Because maybe we didn't have anyone to teach Mridanga. Someone said they will teach Mridanga. They did for a few weeks and then it didn't work out for them. It's nice. I'm glad you're teaching Mridanga. I'm very grateful to you. Now there's one Mataji who's teaching the children how to sing. You've noticed Sunday afternoon? So sweet. Sounds so sweet. No one taught me. Of course, when I was asked to learn, I was interested in something else. But children are, the voice is being trained so they can sing kirtan right from the beginning. That day Gokulanandan I saw, and he said, oh, I would also like to sit here. But we need to have that. Not so much into singing abilities, but, how to play the harmonium, how to play the mridanga, how to cut a vegetable. If you don't know how to cut a vegetable, we usually offer our blood to Krishna, right? We cut our fingers. Oh. Yeah. Correct. Yeah, I agree. In fact, Daita and I even discussed the whole plan, but I didn't know, where to take it from there. The one idea was that the cooks who make offering for the deities, they will only cook for the deities. But in pairs, the Prabhus will learn to cook lunch. Something simple. But they will cook lunch. One day these two, another day some other two, some other two, some other two. But here's a practical problem I face. If I tell someone, today your turn's to cook, I'm afraid I will hear something like, what? I have to go for Harinam. I have to go for books. I have a college program. Why are you limiting me to? I feel that my the importance to Harinam and book distribution is being compromised by what's needed at the temple. And I say, it's only once a week, still. That's the something that I have to work through. Sukadeva. Shri Shuka Vacha.
Be a servant so I could one day learn Bhagavatam. My question was, would be selfish after this discussion, but I'll first ask that question and I'll also ask the question prompted by this discussion. I was curious to know the history of Krishna River.
The history of Krishna River? I don't know.
Okay.
Although it's not Krishna. Krishna. The river is Krishna.
Krishna.
Feminine.
Krishna. Yeah.
So Draupadi is called Krishna. So the river is feminine, but I don't know the history of it. Because you come from Krishna land?
I grew up close.
Yeah, me too. Somewhere. I was born somewhere there. But I don't know the history.
I was surprised to see it mentioned in Bhagavatam. Around where I was born, there were only dams and temples of Lord Shiva. And usually we connect Krishna to Godavari. I mean, Lord Krishna more to Godavari than to River Krishna. So, it's just curious.
But there is Narasimha Dev temple right along the banks of Krishna River.
I've never been there. I'm talking about 100-mile radius where I was born.
Along when Krishna River passes through Vijayawada, there is a place called Mangalagiri where there is Narasimhadev. That Narasimhadev is a very special Narasimhadev. That Narasimhadev deity has an open mouth and millions of devotees offer jaggery water to him to appease his anger. And interestingly enough, after you pour a little, you hear a little burp. That means you know you got to stop. Then the next devotee will come pour jaggery water and he'll burp again. You can hear the burp. And it's not like there is a hole behind and in all the water is going. You don't know where it's not. You keep pouring and pouring and pouring and the deity accepts the jaggery water. And it'll burp saying, enough, next.
Who gets to pour the water?
Devotees.
Anyone?
Yeah.
I also had a follow-up on this, but
yeah, go ahead.
On this discussion, so sometimes it happens. There are two challenges to the situation. I fully agree that Daivi Varnashram Dharma means submit to Guru and please him, please Krishna through him, and Guru means the different lines of authority that follow him. Right. It's not just that one person. Two practical challenges are, number one, there may be some services which are like too different to, it's not that I can't do it, I can do it, but it will only perhaps leave me dissatisfied because I'm not so spiritually advanced to just do it and remain aloof. One example is like, I mean, I'm fine talking to people, but developing relationships with them over a year, I mean, over a day is fine, but over a year is like, wow, too much to handle. That's the first challenge. And the second challenge is when someone else gives me services, I'm fine with that service. I'm fine with the service, but usually how it happens is, it's an added service. The proposition doesn't come like,
do this
instead
thing.
Of that service, do this. It's like, hey, do this. So my usual response is, I'm doing that. And it's not always possible for that devotee. It's not within the scope of that devotee to swap it. It's usually like an additional service. So how do we deal with these two challenges? I don't know if they're too personal. I'll just talk to you.
No, that's fine. Thank you for bringing it up. First of all, submission does not mean that there's no conversation. It's not like a military. Do this. Yes, sir! Even if you don't, it's not military. You can ask. Okay, I have a practical issue. The practical issue is this service, either in time-wise or something, is, you know, comes with that, or now this has got added on, and I have an issue managing my time. You know, some discussion is there, and that's why we have persons that we can discuss with. So, but the submission is that there is a readiness to, yeah, I want to serve, and I have a practical constraint. Can you help move the practical constraint? If I'm unable to do it on my own, can you help move a practical constraint? That's it. But no, the sometimes the default answer is no. That's what I'm talking about. The no comes from without discussion, without conversation. I already imagine that, oh, it's already no. But no, here is the reason, or here's the reason, or is that, does it have to be today? Can it be tomorrow? Is this an emergency? Like that. Discussion. Definitely. No one's against discussion and conversation. Yeah? Terence?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for class. My question is in regards to what we talked about. Sometimes I find like a disconnect with like the services that we're given. Like, you know, Jai Jagannath stressed the other day in one of our classes the importance on studying and reading and being able to learn the philosophy. But like within a day, if you have so many services that require like physical labor, sometimes the energy that you have to actually want to sit down and read isn't there, you know. And being like new to the temple and still adjusting to the program, I find sometimes it's difficult to manage time with trying to read and study and also, you know, doing labor. I like enjoy, you know, being engaged in service, but I however know that there's other facilities that I have, you know, where other Prabhus have come to me personally to ask me for assistance with some of their writing services, such as Sukadev Das, Himanshu. You know, these are things that also keep me inspired and motivated while I'm learning. But sometimes that energy isn't there based on the amount of time throughout the day I might spend doing a service. And I feel sometimes in the temple, I agree with what you were saying, that the significance of one thing shouldn't be seen as more important. Like going on Harinam or doing book distribution shouldn't be seen as more important than actually things that can help maintain the temple and help facilitate other devotees as well. You know, since there's so many of us here that are still inspiring to learn, I feel for new devotees, it should be more inspirational for even people who are senior in higher positions to, you know, sometimes, you know, take the weight, you know, to try to help those of us like Derek Prabhu, Alex, who are new to the system, to try to find things that can also help facilitate our schedules as well, so we can be more balanced and not as tired. But that's my basic comment.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good topic. I would suggest that in the beginning of your Krishna consciousness, when we're just entering the temple and trying to get used to the lifestyle, better not to have 20 authorities. Better to have one authority. Let's say in your case, the Aitha Prabhu. So if different people come and plop things on you, can you do this and can you do that because you have this? Your answer is something that you need to learn is, I'll ask the Aitha Prabhu. If he says do this, I'll do this. If he says do that, I'll do that. That way, his sensitivity to, you're already loaded. You understand? So yeah, there may be a need for writing and something, but the clarity of what to do, when, comes from Daita. Because if you pick up in between here and there, of course, it's not like we don't help out, you know. Can you pick this table? If Daita tells me, I'll do it. That's not the mentality. When things that engage your time primarily, something you should sit down and discuss with the person who's engaging all of us. Daita Prabhu, here's what I want. Here's what I'm being asked of. What do you think? Then he will consider. Do you get time to study? Do you get time to read also? Sometimes we have this idea, I'm going to sit here for 3 hours and read Bhagavatam. Is that realistic? Do we have taste for 3 hours? We aspire for it. But the reality of it is, after 15 minutes, nothing gets in. But then there is a different topic. Someone raised the question. Sometimes in the ashram, there's a sense of competitiveness. They're studying for 2 hours. I should also do it. Why? We should design a program that suits us in consultation with the person who's engaging us or persons. Krishna consciousness is not about what others are doing. It's about me and my relationship with Krishna and how best it can be facilitated. So I'm not saying don't help. I'm saying help, but in consultation with the right authority. Alex or Derek, well, Daita is reading right here. He's available. But the tendency is, oh, I got to be the nice guy, which is nice. We want to be the servant of the devotees, no doubt. But we learn how to do it.
Do we have a taste of reading the books for 3 hours? But can I, correct me if I'm wrong, even if you have taste, but if you're not, why you are reading the books? Because you want service. What you are getting from Prabhupada books is to service. But if you are neglecting the authorities or not doing the service, then what a question of reading books? Does it make sense?
I don't understand the question. Are you supporting it or not supporting
it? I'm supporting
it. I always like to be supported.
I'm supporting my statement. Correct me if I'm wrong.
What is your statement?
My statement is, if you are reading books for 6 hours or 7 hours and complaining that because I got interest in reading books, so I don't like the other services. But what we are getting for Prabhupada books is two services. Do service in a proper attitude, whatever you do. So if you are not following that thing, then what is the purpose of reading those books? Just to make a show off?
Well, let me put it this way. I wouldn't say it so strongly, but yeah. If we follow the way Prabhupada designed our day, if we follow that, we have time for everything. The issue is not so much we don't have time, the issue is we don't follow that schedule. We sleep late, so we don't wake up early. And we don't wake up early, we come to japa dragging our feet. When we are chanting Hare Krishna, we are in some other planet. We don't finish our rounds. So we have some rounds left over. Then when the service time comes, I have rounds left over. I have to study Prabhupada. But if you just follow Prabhupada's schedule, there's time for hearing, there's time for studying, there's time for chanting, there's time for serving, there's time for kirtan, there's time, everything has its time. Prabhupada designed it so beautifully. Now some persons may have the nature and the inclination by their own Krishna conscious development that they may want to engage in more systematic study, which is fine. But let it develop naturally. Why imitate something? That's my point. So study, everyone, without exception, must study Prabhupada's book. There's no doubt about it. It should not be that one service should happen at the expense of another. I have so much service that I can't study Prabhupada's books. That's a problem. I have no service, therefore I'm just loitering around. That is a problem. For me, something that doesn't match when someone protests is, at the same time, I get reports of unnecessary time-wasting internet usage, unnecessary websites that people have gone to. I can give you a report. It comes to me every month. So there is time. It's not that time isn't there. It's that there is being engaged elsewhere. And that's what I'm addressing. In principle, those who are chanting Hare Krishna, time works differently for them than those who are not. Prabhupada, you saw his day, how it was designed. Our spiritual masters, and you become a materialist, how is their time spent? So Krishna facilitates. It's not like he's mean-spirited, he facilitates. It's a matter of how we use it. Make sense? Derek? That strong stare, something happening inside? Okay. Yeah, last question will end. So 8:45. Acharya Nista.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to just explore also this topic because the principle of surrender is considered the primary quality of a devotee. So what we're discussing is how the devotee is doing the surrendering or adopting this mood of the servant of the servant of the servant. So can you explain what's wrong if sometimes we see that people go off to do maybe something independently? And they're, you know, on the idea, I'm serving Prabhupada in this way. But what is the necessity of, or how does that relate to the point that you're mentioning, that without being, it's a form of kind of being connected, right? If you have a spiritual authority, and in another case also that we hear that one should be fully surrendered to the spiritual master. In many cases, the spiritual master is not around. So we're trying to develop that quality. How does that relate to, you know, serving with our community?
First of all, it depends on who the person is who's saying, I'm serving Prabhupada and doing on my own. If it's a new bhakta, that doesn't make any sense. If it's a mature devotee who served the movement for many years and has served and learned the principle of servant of the servant, they can. It depends who's saying it, first of all. Second of all, the statement in and of itself may not mean much unless you attach it to who's saying it as a personality. Okay? A person who by nature, let's say, has the servant of servant mentality and they have say, I want to serve Prabhupada in this way, is different from an independent-minded person who always thinks of escaping, you know, being under an authority. That particular statement has very different connotations depending on who's saying it. It also depends whether a person is a grihastha or a temple resident. It doesn't apply to one, it applies to the other. Like that. Depends on who's saying it. You have to have other perspectives to qualify that statement as whether it is service attitude or not. Okay? And sometimes when the spiritual master is not available. But that doesn't mean that we will only do what the spiritual master says. You understand? Being a servant of the servant, principle is that I serve whatever is given to me, I serve in a manner that is pleasing to my guru. That is called guru seva. That it is pleasing to my guru. And part of pleasing guru is service with humility, service with attention, service in a manner that is pleasing to Krishna, service in a manner that is pleasing to the Vaishnavas. Then guru is pleased. Yeah, this is nice. Otherwise a person will have a blinders. I only serve my guru, everyone else out of the way before I trample them, because I'm a servant of my guru. Doesn't make sense. So gurus that are not available or accessible to their disciples necessarily just because of being traveling here and there, generally those gurus will say, you find a devotee in your temple or in your area and you serve them. So everything that is done under that authority is service to Guru. In fact, all gurus do say like that. Many gurus say like that. That's the instruction. Wherever you are, serve the devotees. Follow the whoever is the authority figure there, follow them. So someone asked Maharaj this question 2 days ago. I have a service. My service has changed. I'm asked to do something else. How do I know that it is Krishna? So Maharaj's answer was very simple. It was brilliant and simple. Just do what is being asked of. And if it is not what Krishna wants you to do anyway, then Krishna will intervene. But you don't sit here evaluating, does Krishna really want me to do this? Krishna will intervene. Is that okay? Does that address part of your... Okay. Thank you for your kindness. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Oh, yeah, yeah. Can we get together, Temple Prabhus, to talk about a few things? Where do we meet? Indoctrination group? Yeah, let's go there. Let's go there.